Confucian teachings are based on five human relationships which are founded on moral principles. The five human relationships are the ones between husband, wife, parent, child, siblings, governors, subjects, and friends. Husband-wife represents the smallest and most intimate circle of human relationships. Outside the small circle is the extended family, which includes the relationships of father and son and those among the siblings. Outside the family, there is society at large, which includes additional relationships between the individual and his governor and his circle of friends. We now often talk about the need to unite people. In ancient times, the Chinese did not use the word unite, for the five human relationships defined the union of all people. Everyone on this earth is our brother. Each is responsible for the other. Parents being compassionate, sons and daughters being filial to their parents, siblings and friends being respectful to each other. Consequently, the nation and its people are already a perfect union. The relationships between people also define responsibilities from one to the other. Everyone has his own duty and responsibility to fulfill. Human beings differ from animals by adhering to the human relationships and basic moral principles. The practice of Confucianism is based on having sincere thought, a virtuous mind, correct behavior, a well-organized family and nation, and peace for all. This is identical to the views of Buddhism. Buddhism also emphasizes practicing and learning. It all starts from generating the bodhicitta mind. Bodhi is a Sanskrit word which means enlightenment. Enlightenment means an awakened mind. It is similar to the sincere thought and virtuous mind advocated by Confucianism. A Qing Dynasty government official defined sincerity very well. He noted that sincerity means having no single thought. As long as there were corrupted thoughts, wandering thoughts, or even the rise of a single thought, then there was no sincerity. His definition is identical to Buddhism. The sixth patriarch said, "The pure mind contains nothing, therefore collects no dust." However, people in general have a lot of wandering thoughts. How can one get rid of these wandering thoughts? The Confucian answer is to fight against the uprising desires and achieve wisdom. This practice was stressed in the elementary school of the Confucian system. Severing all desires is, Buddha said, to stop all worries and troubles. In the past, the Chinese elementary school students were well trained to guard against the uprising of desires. Schools stressed training in students' concentration and wisdom. Students started to learn at the age of 7. They stayed with their teachers and only went home during holidays. They were taught the correct ways to deal with everyday life, in the proper manner to attend to the teachers and elder schoolmates. This was called the education of moral principles based on human relations. When the children went home, they would treat their parents and siblings with filial piety and respect. From the ages of 7 to 12, students were required to memorize and recite fluently the ancient texts. the teacher would first pick the materials which contained the profound wisdom of sages and saints, and then encouraged the students to read and recite the material up to 100 or 200 times a day. Children would have scattered thoughts if they were not assigned any tasks to do. The purpose of reciting was the focused training to eventually obtain a pure mind, concentration, and wisdom, even though they may not have understood the meanings. However, the current educational system, in existence since the revolution of 1911, eliminated this 2,000-year-old tradition and adopted the Western educational system. This change, if one examines it closely enough, would lead one to the root of modern China's social problems. At 13, children were sent to Tai school, for there was no junior or high school in ancient China. Tai school emphasized the analysis and discussion of the materials students had memorized in elementary school. The teachers were experts or specialists in their teaching fields and would concentrate on that field during their entire career. Each of them taught a small class with 10 to 20 students, and the lectures were not necessarily given in the classroom with textbooks. Back then, all the textbooks were printed in the universal format, 20 words per line and 10 lines per page, with no space in between. The format was standard for the entire nation, regardless of the publisher. In addition, both teacher and students memorized the textbooks so well, they even knew exactly where the materials were in the textbooks. As everything had been memorized earlier, there was no need for books after elementary school. Teachers often took their students on trips to experience and learn. The knowledge was imparted to them along the way. Thus, the trips were without textbooks or restraints, but accompanied with wine and food and filled with joy. The students attended to the needs of the teacher. So, as they concluded their travels to the many beautiful places, the course would come to an end as well. For many, attending Tai school was the most joyful time of their lives. In Taiwan, those who are in their 80s or 90s may have experienced this kind of education. My late teacher, Mr. Lee, then in his 90s, could still apply materials he had memorized in elementary school when writing articles. No references were needed. This was the method he used to acquire the original wisdom. Original wisdom comes from the pure mind. The wisdom of knowing nothing, emphasized in Buddhism, is the original wisdom. Only when one has a pure mind which contains nothing will he also know everything when he is in contact with the external world. Therefore, the practicing and studying of Buddhism starts with eliminating all thoughts in order to obtain a pure mind. And that made me think of our children who are so pure, so innocent and uncontaminated in their thinking. That is why it is best for our children to start learning Buddhist teaching in their childhood, because with little effort, they can truly and easily benefit from it. The experiences of a person with a pure mind are so different and profound that no ordinary person can truly appreciate them. A real practitioner will keep himself from being greedy, angry, ignorant, and arrogant towards others and his environment. If one has any of the elements just mentioned, then he is neither sincere nor virtuous. Sincerity and virtuousness are the basis for training the mind. A person with a pure mind and body will not get ill. People suffer from illnesses because their minds have been filled with wandering thoughts and worries, derived from greed, anger, ignorance, and arrogance. As mentioned earlier, sincerity and virtuousness are the basis for purifying one's mind. Once the mind becomes pure, the body does the same. Naturally, he will be immune from illness. Thus, a realized practitioner would never get ill. Moreover, if a person is determined to follow the path of Buddha, he or she will not die in the conventional sense. A conventional death means a person does not know exactly when he will leave this world, nor where he will go afterwards. A true cultivator, on the other hand, with confidence in himself and in Amitabha Buddha, who cultivates according to Buddhist doctrine, will be capable of controlling both his time of leaving this world and of being reborn in the Western Pure Land. This is neither unusual nor a fairy tale, but the absolute truth, and can be achieved by practicing the pure mind. Therefore, one must understand how important it is to be free of worries and attachments. Every Buddhist should maintain a pure mind and body at all times, treating everyone and everything with equality and composure. Only then will the family be in harmony, the society in unity, and the world at peace. No longer would we have feuds, conflicts, or wars. The peace and happiness that we pray for today would then no longer be a dream. World peace can be achieved if we combine Confucianism and Buddhism into our educational system. Loyalty, filial piety, compassion, love, trustworthiness, responsibility, peace, and equality are the eight basic Confucian moral principles, and they are symbolized by four bodhisattvas in Buddhism. Earth Store Bodhisattva represents filial piety, and hence the Earth Store Sutra is also called the Filial Piety Sutra, due to the fact that it teaches filial respect for both parents and teachers, who are both equally important in Buddhism and Confucianism. This can be illustrated by the way the ancient Chinese addressed each other according to traditional etiquette. Back then, people generally did not address each other by their first names. Parents and teachers could call others by their first names all their lives. For all others, calling people by those first names was considered disrespectful, unless the males were under 19 and the females under 16. Calling others by their last name was even worse. Upon reaching adulthood, one would be given an adult name by their friends, to be used by those friends and all others. To treat one's parents with filial piety and to respect teachers were the innate virtues of human nature. The goal of Buddhist teaching is for one to realize the true nature of the mind, which can only be achieved by discovering the virtuous human nature, without which one will never become enlightened. Guanyin Bodhisattva symbolizes compassion, which represents kindness and love. Wanzhishi Li Bodhisattva symbolizes wisdom, which represents faith and loyalty. With compassion and wisdom, one can generate merits. Pushyan Bodhisattva represents peace and equality, which stems from his vows and cultivation. To enjoy merits is to enjoy peace and equality. To cultivate merits in childhood, generate merits in middle age, and enjoy merits in older age are described in Chinese as truth, virtue, and beauty. One who enjoys merit in old age is called the complete person, which is similar to Buddha in Buddhism. We must understand that Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are not gods, but the most perfect and happiest beings for us to learn from. These principles were evoked long ago by wise ancestors in China, long before Buddhism was introduced there. Buddha Shakyamuni, Confucius, and Manfucius had never met, but they all had identical concepts and teaching methods. That was truly a coincidence, and as is said in Chinese, heroes would have similar views, or as is said in the West, great minds think alike. Recently, a student came to me and asked about the four universal vows of a Buddha or Bodhisattva, which are as follows. Sentient beings are innumerable. I vow to save them all. Afflictions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them all. Dharma doors are boundless. I vow to master them all. Buddhahood is unsurpassable. I vow to attain it. In order to save all beings from suffering, one must himself be a good cultivator to excel in moral and academic achievement. A cultivator can learn by upholding the precepts so as to guard against harmful consequences created by speech, body, and mind. Or in other words, deeds, and thought. Also, greed, anger, ignorance, and arrogance are the sources of all passions and delusions. Therefore, one must cut off all the attachments to erroneous ways in order to be enlightened. Buddhism is for everyone, regardless of sex, age, occupation, nationality, or religion. Everyone should learn and practice it, for it is the teaching of ultimate, perfect wisdom. It can now be said that every corner of the world needs Buddha's teaching. However, it is not easy to nurture Buddhist teachers. The difficulty lies with the fact that most people could not renounce their worldly fame and wealth which are the major obstacles to studying Buddhism. Without a pure mind, there is no way to truly understand Buddha's teachings and to realize the causes of all the problems in this world. Meanwhile, without virtue of merits and good causes and conditions, practitioners cannot find good teachers. Therefore, I always encourage young practitioners to resolve to save our nation and the world. Recently, we have established a Dharma site in the United States. The goal is to introduce the traditional Chinese culture to Westerners and also to help them practice Buddhism. Our ancestors invented the most precious and timeless vehicle, a classical Chinese language called Wan Yan Wan, in order to transmit the ancient culture to us and future generations. With this powerful vehicle, we can read the publications of Confucius or Mencius that were written 2,500 years ago, just as if we were talking to them. Because our ancestors realized that language would be changing from time to time, they used this classical Chinese language to pass on their wisdom, thoughts, skills, and experiences. It is not difficult to learn Wan Yan Wan. Mr. Lee, my teacher, has taught us the secret that to read the classical language is to recite fluently 50 chapters in ancient Chinese characters. To be able to write it is to memorize 100 chapters. With this key, Wan Yan Wan, the ancient Chinese wisdom and Buddhism will become our private treasure. For the latest translations of Buddhist sutras were in this classical language. Along with the pure, non-discriminating, and compassionate mind, we can unlock our ultimate wisdom. I have encouraged practitioners to read the Infinite Life Sutra, which is written in a simpler form of the classical Chinese language. 80% of its content should be understandable by the general public. There are only 48 chapters in this compilation of the Infinite Life Sutra, which is close to the amount that Mr. Lee required us to memorize. This is a good way to start learning the classical Chinese language. After reading and memorizing this book, I believe there will be no more obstacles in reading other Buddhist sutras. I strongly urge not only practitioners but also Westerners who want to learn the Chinese culture and Buddhism to memorize 50 chapters of Wan Yan Wan, or the Infinite Life Sutra. With 2 or 3 years of effort, one can obtain the key to explore the wonder of ancient Chinese wisdom, and at the same time transform the Buddhist sutras into one's own private treasure. Without this key, having all these collections of sutras of ancient Chinese literature would be futile, for there is no entry into the treasury. Ladies and gentlemen, parents and students, the primary school is the foundation for happiness in human life, the root of the nation's future, and the caretaker of the future society. You have made such contributions to this greatest task in human life and society. It is most meaningful to nurture capable and virtuous youth, for they are the future owners and stars of our nation and of the world. I would like to extend my gratitude and highest respect to you. I wish you all great health and happiness. May the Dharma joy and prosperity befall everyone. Mr. Yu's Encounter with the Kitchen God, lectured by Venerable Master Jin Gong. Once upon a time, during the Ming Dynasty of China, there was a scholar, Du Yu, who was kind and talented. Mr. Yu was a successful candidate under the formal civil service examination system. When he was in his mid-twenties, his family was struggling with financial problems. He found it necessary to become a teacher, and with some of his friends, established an educational organization called the Wan Chong Association. The principle of the association was to follow the teachings of a book called Yin Zhi, which taught people how to think and behave in an ethical manner. They had been running the Wan Chong for several years, but Du's life just got worse. As a candidate, he again took the formal civil service examination to obtain a higher position in the government, but he failed 7 times. What's more, he had 5 precious sons, but 4 of them died young. The last one disappeared when he was 8. He also had 4 daughters, but 3 of them died young as well. As a result, his wife cried and cried and became blind from missing her son so much. Feeling his life was impossible, Mr. Yu complained to God of his unfairness. He believed he had been performing ethical deeds. He did not understand why he had received such a harsh punishment from God. He just could not understand it. Therefore, at the age of 40, he began every year to write letters to the kitchen god. It is a Chinese tradition to believe there was a kitchen god governing each family, reporting their behavior to heaven. Then Du burned the letters as tradition dictated. He hoped the kitchen god would report his good deeds to heaven, and that consequently, Mr. Yu would receive God's mercy in return. He had been writing the letters for 7 years, but had never received an answer. Then, at the age of 47, his prayer was finally answered. It was the new year when everyone was celebrating their family reunion, except for the Yus. Du, his blind wife, and their daughter were sitting around, sad, lonely. All of a sudden, someone was knocking on the door. Mr. Yu opened the door to find an old man with gray hair and a white beard, with a very kind and polite appearance. He bowed gently to Mr. Yu and said, "My name is Zhong, and I have come from far away. I was just passing your house when I overheard someone sighing in lamentation. I just stopped by to see if there is anything I can do." Mr. Yu was at first surprised, then noticed Mr. Zhong's appearance and the way he was talking. He felt that Mr. Zhong was not a common old man. Mr. Yu was glad to see someone coming to comfort him, particularly at this time. He was filled with appreciation, and then burst forth with lots of complaints. Du kept complaining and complaining and was about to read those letters to Mr. Zhong, but Mr. Zhong stopped him and said, "You need not read me those letters you wrote to the kitchen god. I know everything about your family, everything you have done for these many years. I know very well. And now, you want to know why you have led such a miserable life, even though you have performed good deeds in your community? Listen carefully. It is because you have fostered too many evil thoughts. In fact, what you have been calling good deeds were just frauds. You have been doing good to obtain a good reputation in your community. For these past years, you have written to God just to show off and complain. Instead of regretting your motives, you have continued to ask for favors from God. Frankly speaking, you have not yet received enough punishment. If I were you, I should begin to worry about the next ones I was going to face. Du was astonished at first, then thought of what he had done for these years in Wan Chong, practicing the teachings with his fellows, for the sake of goodness. He could not accept Mr. Zhang's accusation of doing nothing but frauds. All right, said Mr. Zhang. First of all, one of the teachings from Ingzhi is that you have to cherish the papers on which characters are written. Those papers deliver the teachings from our ancestors to educate their descendants. You are supposed to protect and respect them. Instead, you allowed your students to patch windows, scrub their tables, and even wrap packages with those precious papers. You just told them not to stain the papers, but did not stop them. Sometimes you picked up some of those papers on the street and burned them in front of people, just to present yourself as an ethical person. That was one of your faults. Second, the releasing of living beings is one of the teachings from Ingzhi. But you were doing this just because other people did. You stopped doing it right after they stopped. You were not releasing living beings because you had mercy for them. In fact, you still cooked live seafood in your house. How could you allow yourself to violate the teachings behind the backs of your fellows? Third, you always spoke harsh words, even though you were aware they were hurting people. Although you are a fluent speaker, as you were chatting with people, you could hardly keep yourself from hurting them with harsh words. Of all the evil thoughts, this one aggravated God the most. You made too many mistakes, but still considered yourself a good man. You can lie to yourself, but not to God. Fourth, adulterous thought is the worst one among evil thoughts. Whenever you saw a pretty woman, you could not help thinking about being with her. Though you did not take action, you have committed adultery. If you were given the opportunity, you surely would have taken advantage of it. You should know very well that the thought buried deep in your mind will somehow trigger an action when the time is right. You are fostering evil thoughts as if no one was aware of it. You instructed your students one way, but allowed yourself to another. The letters you have written were delivered to God by the kitchen god. Indeed, God dispatched inspectors to investigate it. But so far, they have not been able to find anything which has qualified as a good deed. When you were alone, your mind thought only of greed, adultery, jealousy, arrogance, and revenge. Though you acted like a good person, your evil thoughts were growing deeper and deeper in your mind, and you did not even notice them. Those evil thoughts led to your miserable life. you should prepare for your next disaster if you are not able to purify your thoughts. Du was frightened, wondering how Mr. Zhang knew so much about him. He realized that Mr. Zhang had to be someone dispatched by God. Then he went on his knees to Mr. Zhang and begged regretfully for forgiveness. "From now on," said Mr. Zhang, "you have to completely root out evil thoughts from your mind, while at the same time raising good ones. Do something substantially good for people with all your heart, and ask nothing in return. You should know very well that as a human being, you are bound to dedicate contributions to your community, country, and world. Sometimes, you will help people without their appreciation, or even receive complaints for your help. You should not be discouraged as long as you are acting from your heart. No matter how small the contribution is, you should try your best to accomplish it. Having good thoughts in your mind is even more important than carrying them out. Practicing cultivation through good thoughts is the essence of morality." "Besides," said Mr. Zhang, "being good consists of two elements, endurance and perseverance. You have to endure many hardships with no complaints as you persevere in helping people for the rest of your life. Consequently, your life will be rewarded much more than you know." "I know," said Mr. Zhang, "that you are not too stubborn to change your bad personality. That is why I am here. I hope that you will take my advice and from now on be a truly good person." After he finished talking, he walked toward the kitchen and then disappeared on the spot. Du realized that Mr. Zhang was the kitchen god. He lit an incense stick right away, lifted it toward the sky, and thanked him over and over again. From that day on, Du changed his name to Pure Mind, hoping that it would remind him of being pure whenever people called his name. He swore that he would substantially fulfill Mr. Zhang's advice. At the beginning, it was difficult to turn one's long-time bad habits upside down at once. However, he prayed for God to help him endure and persevere as Mr. Zhang had advised. He believed in his heart that someday he would totally correct his bad personality and that consequently his fate would be changed. He knew it was true that fate depended upon what he did. He practiced good deeds with respect and vigilance, as if God was watching him. As long as the deeds were beneficial to people, regardless of being easy or difficult, he always acted with all his heart. Although he sometimes was not able to complete the contribution, he was nonetheless satisfied with his efforts. Du also set himself four principles. First, strengthening moral ties between humans. Second, studying hard to obtain the knowledge of how to take care of himself both physically and mentally. Third, being humble as a way to keep his merits longer. Fourth, enduring any hardship in life, for this is the basic way to attain enlightenment. He kept practicing day after day, year after year. In about 3 years, he virtually changed himself into a pure mind person. His mind dwelt on nothing but good thoughts. When he was silent, his mind was as pure as a piece of white paper. Just as Mr. Zhang said, his fate had changed, and his life came with unexpected rewards. He was invited to be a teacher to the son of the Prime Minister, from which he earned great respect from his country. He also passed the examination to obtain a higher position in the government, which he had previously failed 7 times. And then, unbelievably, he found his son, alive and well, who had been missing for several years. He brought his son back to his blind wife. Miraculously, her vision came back after her son kissed her eyes. At last, they once again had the warmest family reunion. After all these miracles happened, Mr. Pure Mind believed deeply in his heart that what Mr. Zhang told him was really true. Gradually, he lost his desire to work for the government and wanted only to go back to his hometown to lead a common life. After his resignation, the Prime Minister granted him a reward for his excellent work. He returned to his hometown and practiced even harder. Deep in his mind, unexpectedly, he found himself at peace. Nothing was able to worry him. He started to realize that true happiness came from doing what was right to do without asking for something in return. Meanwhile, the pure mind would come right after the true happiness. Though he had lost several children, he was very proud of all his grandchildren who had succeeded marvelously in their careers. After a long life, he died at 88, with honor and with peace. Mr. Pure Mind had devoted himself to accumulate a great deal of merits, which made the great rewards possible in his life. Unexpectedly, he found himself at peace and in mindfulness. That was the greatest of all his unexpected rewards. How many messages do we get from this story? Though it took place in China hundreds of years ago, it revealed that the same truth exists in everyone's life today. There are causes and consequences, which is a natural law that everyone has to live with. A different cause triggers a different consequence. If you want a tree to bear fruit, then you have to water it with care and give it proper light. Just like Mr. Pure Mind, who made his effort to root out his evil thoughts from his mind through the 4 principles he set and practiced with determination, by dedicating his life to the service of his community. Without asking for anything in return, he changed his miserable life and obtained what he deserved. For an Amitabha recitation practitioner, it will be easy for them to pursue the Pure Land if they can purify the mind first and practice with respect. Would you like to change your fate too? Be sure to have a pure mind. No matter how little the contribution is, or whether you are capable of accomplishing it or not, just try your best with a pure mind. Amitabha.